If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake. Inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
You probably think you know today's guest because she became famous on The Real Housewives of Orange County. But as today's interview will prove, you don't know the real Elizabeth Vargas at all. We had such a fun yet deep conversation. Real Housewives gave us just a snippet of who Elizabeth is, but it was amazing to be able to talk in depth with her about her real life. So many people tend to have their guards up after doing a reality show, but she was absolutely so open. We talked about relationships, about growing up with trauma, her entrepreneurial spirit. She's so positive, even about things in her life that were pretty rough. We talk a little bit about the housewives and get some great behind the scenes stories. You won't believe what she thought she was auditioning for when she went in to meet executives for the first time. Get ready for Elizabeth Vargas on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so happy to finally meet you. We have such a great mutual friend, David Weintraub, and it's my honor and my pleasure to have you on Misunderstood.
Thank you. No, it's my honor to actually meet you. I'm happy to be here.
Great. So, you know, in sifting through your Instagram and through, you know, seeing what people see of you from The Housewives show, people think that you live this fabulous, luxurious life. But I want to go back to your beginnings, because whether or not people know this, and some do, but some really don't, that you came from very humble beginnings, and you had a lot going on in your childhood. And I really want to start there to really paint a picture for people of who you are based on, you know, really where you came from, as opposed to what people read and believe about you now. So talk to me about where you're from, what your childhood was like, that kind of thing.
My father was a preacher/knife salesman door to door. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and we lived on a farm slash ranch, and very humble beginnings in Missouri. You know, we had our own cattle, we had our own sheep, we had our own chicken, we had our own eggs. You know, I know how to milk a cow. Put it that way.
Amazing.
We're Paris Hilton.
Yeah. It's a great skill to have. So they
can. Yeah, I know how to milk a cow. Hey, it turned it out handy in the video, you know, later on down there.
Probably use that more than algebra, though.
I'm like, thank you, Mom. You're so amazing. Right. No, but yeah. So, you know, Missouri, the farm, a preacher dad, very humble, but very blessed to be able to be around all the animals and everything. And then moved to Washington State after I was around 12, you know, got through, we went to private school as well in Missouri. So I was really secluded and really not allowed to see a lot of people outside of the church environment in Missouri. So I was really, what do you call it? I'm having a brain fart. Anyway,
secluded.
I didn't have a lot of
you were secluded.
Input. Secluded. Yeah. And so then when we went to Washington State, my mom wanted to kind of get us out of that church environment. We ended up going to public school and it was a shock. We had no idea how to handle a public school. And so it was a shock and I was made fun of a lot. And I was told I was a nerd. I had an accent. So I went to speech class to get rid of my accent. You know, my little twang, and then so I could be accepted in school. But I was always picked on, always teased, but I excelled in everything just to prove to everybody that, you know, I wasn't the dork nerd that you guys were all blaming me to be. I was picked on a lot, but it was great. You know, whatever, I learned.
Yeah. So talk to me about the church that you are a part of. I know a lot of this came out during your stint on The Housewives, but what was that like to grow up with your family so heavily involved in this church? I know that it was really more like a cult than a church. So explain to people what that's like, because I think that there is a misconception from people about the difference in the two.
There is an extreme difference. There is a spirituality and a love for God and love for the powers that be and angels above. And then there's the cult-like atmosphere, which is very controlling, manipulative, and evil. And that's what I was raised in. I learned very early in life how to lie to the elders in order to not be beaten or not be locked in a closet or whatever. So the environment that I grew up in was very harsh, very manipulative and rough. I didn't know it was going to come out on The Housewives, but it did. And I think in today's environment with a lot of the child trafficking and a lot of the kids being abused, that my whole life I hid that secret because, you know, the church environment was exactly that, you know, abusing children sexually and physically. And for us to get out of that, my mom got us out of that environment, was a blessing. But now going through life and I'm an adult, I see these stories coming out that have to do with child trafficking and have to do with child abuse. And it makes me even more keen on moving forward with how can I help, because I actually lived it. So I guess, you know, moving to Washington, we got out of it, but I do know exactly what happens. I do know exactly how it works. And I do know exactly if you have somebody to help you, you can get out of it. And I know exactly the lifelong turmoil that a child is going to bear, the guilt, when they have to come out of that environment. My whole life I've lived with it. And I've lived in the shadow of that guilt of somebody else's fault. And it's a horrific way to live. You really have to have some strong people around you.
Yeah. Well, I really wanted to ask you about that a little more. So I went to a therapeutic boarding school. I don't know if you've read about those, but those have similar, people believe that they're, you know, kind of go down the same road of being like cults. My boarding school that I went to from 12 to 17 was called CEDU. It was based on the Synanon cult. We had to wear specific clothes. We can only listen to specific music. We could not talk to anyone in the outside world. I couldn't talk to my family or friends. You had to make all new friends. We had to work on a farm. We had to eat what we were given there. And you know, we had to do certain exercises. It was very physical. We had to do a lot of physical work there. You know, I had to dig a grave with a spoon and lay in it. And so while I was there, though, of course, I wanted to leave. I wanted to get out. I ran away a couple of times. Eventually, I grew to say, well, I don't have another way out. I was so young, right? And my parents, my mother had sent me there. So I really had nowhere to go when I ran away. So also while I was there, my father died. So I really felt like this.
Oh my God. It
was like a place where it became my family. You know, I didn't know any different. So I started to go.
He groomed you also. You're being groomed. There's no question.
Yeah. So I became accustomed to following the rules. And then I became the person that instilled the rules as I got older there to the younger, newer kids. And I didn't realize it was a cult. I mean, later on in, you know, I think it was 1996, it was, or maybe 10 years after that, but it was shut down for abuse. And while I was there, I didn't see it as something that I was involved in a cult until I could step out of it later on in life and realize this is not the way I'm supposed to be treated, you know? Yeah. And
this isn't normal to bury yourself in your own grave and see how it feels.
Yeah. No, but it's like when adults are telling you that this is how you have to follow rules, so it's interesting. I have grown up having some good qualities from it. I definitely have learned not to lie. I know about boundaries. I've learned because we would get in so much trouble if we got caught for anything. You know, I didn't want to be punished, so I learned how to not be punished, right? So, but I think it's also made it very difficult in my life to trust people and to be part of any organized religion. So I'm curious, are you still religious or did that take a lot of your faith away?
It absolutely took my faith away. I've spent years finding my own self through self-awareness, not through any external influence, because I don't believe in people. I don't believe in religion. I don't believe in big screens and giving money to a pastor that flies a jet and you know, rides in a yacht. I'm very cynical when it comes to preachers, but spirituality is different. You know, I believe I have angels above that have certainly created a path for me of light that I can share with others and somehow in my life give back my experience to give some other woman hope or some other little girl hope that you can get out of that. You can create an atmosphere that you're safe in, that you can meet a man. I never thought I could ever meet anybody. Relationships, I'm sure like you, relationships with adults or anybody is different. You don't feel normal. I never knew like you. I never knew it wasn't right until I got in trouble with, you know, and accidentally told a neighbor and the church got shut down. And you know, it was my fault. So I got cast out of the church. My whole family did. And we moved to Washington because I did something. And my father had claimed I was the culprit. I was, you know, he told me you just lost a father, but he moved with us to Washington and then he died. Like you. And I never got closure with him. I never got to really fully understand what he had put us through, but before he died.
Yeah.
So I couldn't like sit there and go, you idiot, what you did to your children. So yeah, I mean, it's really affected like you decisions, but if we can harness this entanglement of our past and really try and make this pathway to positivity and know that we are where we are at today because we're supposed to be a tool for others. If we understand that, then I think there's a goal and there's a purpose behind all the abuse. I just have to find a purpose, because if I don't find a purpose, I'm just miserable.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that.
I gotta find a purpose. I'm like, why did this happen?
So you talked about relationships with men. You eventually met and married a man who you were married to for 17 years, 20 years at the end, right?
We were married for 5 together for 20.
Okay.
He proposed twice. I said, no, you know, fear of commitment.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. So how did you, who were you when you met your husband? Were you working? Did you have aspirations? Yeah. Like, tell me about who you were.
I've always worked. I don't care if it's $6 an hour, $5 an hour, $3 an hour being a babysitter. I worked since I was 12. 13. And I've always been a hard worker and a runner. I run and it's therapy for me. So I was a state champion in running. You know, I'm just very, I have such a drive. It's insane. This fire inside me because of the abuse. I just didn't want to tell anybody. So in order for me to get it out, the fireball, I would run and I would work myself to death.
Wow.
And so when I met my ex, or my ex, Berndt Bodell, I was working three jobs trying to make it, broke, jazz singer, because singing jazz was my therapy in nightclubs. So I was underage singing in nightclubs, you know, summertime, you know, and I could really make it move. So, you know, it was awesome. And I was very sexual as a young girl because I went through a lot of sexual abuse. So I had this sexuality about me that I didn't really know. I didn't mean to be groomed that way, but I was. And even though I'm not in that sexual environment anymore, I'm still a sexual individual. And but I learned not to make that who I was, but in singing, you could create a cool Jessica Rabbit vibe and it's accepted. So I learned that in jazz, I could be really flirty and fun on stage and then get off and be this miserable person that I was.
Yeah.
So I met him, misery loves company. And then we got married. Two miserable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I mean, was there some redeeming quality to it? I mean, you must have, did you enjoy being married?
Oh, absolutely. No. So I fell in love with my husband. He came to all my shows. Berndt is the most amazing person. I mean, we fight back and forth, but we, you know, he really showed me the light, really gave me a path to forgiveness. We didn't talk a lot about my past, but he knew about it. He, you know, without his OCD stability, as wealthy as he was, you know, I was broke. He was rich. This, you know, he was using my youth, which is priceless. And I was, you know, we were using each other. It wasn't like a one-sided, you know, show here.
Yeah.
And so together we made a great team. You know, we would go to, he was very introvert. I would introduce him to people because I'm an extrovert. He would be very, you know, rich guy, CEO in a, you know, board meeting. And I'd be like, hey, and we, you know, we'd hire like, you know, Motley Crue to play at a show. And we'd, you know, here's Vince Neil, here's, you know, here's my husband, Berndt. And Berndt would be like, hi, you know, so we made a great team for 20 years. And, you know, I'd still be with him because I was still in love with him when I filed for divorce, but he had some mishaps with other women during the marriage, allegedly, through the divorce process. You know, we're still friends. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what is your relationship now with him? Your friends?
We're friends. And, you know, he called me a little while ago and I guess he's remarried. So good for them. He loves to be married. So, you know, whatever. And, you know, he's going through some ailments with his health right now, really serious ones. So I told him if whoever he's with, wasn't going to be there when he started looking emaciated, I would be there for him. And I'm assuming you can guess what that ailment might be.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, we wish him the best of luck, obviously.
So he's lived a great life. So, but I would definitely be there for him if anything happened, just because he was there for me. And, you know, as you know, just finding your way through life as a child, having that history, feeling uncomfortable, feeling like an outcast, trying to just be normal, is hard. And he really forced me to be normal around really wealthy people. I had to be, you know, he groomed me to be the perfect wife, literally groomed me. And I would say that would be bad if I wasn't already messed up before I met him.
Right.
But it was actually a good thing because I got to understand the wealth of the environment and I got to really meet great people. And, you know, in the end, I only am as successful as my past and my lawyers. And ultimately I learned how to take care of great homes, how to take care of yachts and jets and helicopters. And I knew the whole life.
Right.
I know all of it.
Yeah. You know, it's always interesting to me when people say their marriage failed or, you know, they're upset about the outcome of it. But I do think that you're an example of someone who can take the years that you did have with him as like a learning experience. You grew up kind of with him. He was, a little bit older than you. Right.
A lot.
Yeah. And so, You know, he, I think you probably learned from him. He obviously, you know, learned from you, got something from you that he needed. You kept him young, whatever it was, you gave him a voice.
I had a father figure, but not.
Right.
But that father figure thing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, you know, have a problem with that, but at the same time, it, you know, it's something you will always cherish. And even though that relationship ended and it was very, you know, difficult, and I'm sure a lot of ups and downs with that, I'm really happy to hear that you can be in a place where you know that at the end or when he needs you, you are someone who will be there. I think that says a lot about you and him, even though you guys have gone through a lot and may still be going through a little bit. So I am happy to hear about that. So talk to me about how the Housewife franchise came upon you. How did that happen?
Oh my God, what a whirlwind. I can't even believe I was on that show. What a crazy, crazy ride. Mm-hmm. I was in music. I owned a tech company and Edge Music Network. And in the interim of owning the music company, I met a rapper named Too Short. He's a San Francisco Bay Area rapper. Everyone knows him.
Yep. And I know him too. Yep.
I didn't know him. I thought he was going to be really short when I met him, and he wasn't.
Oh, that's great. That's so cool.
So, you know, I met him and we ended up working together. He was really responsible. So we remained friends. Well, during the divorce, my ex-husband had invested a lot of money in the company. So the judge kind of, we shut it down because it was both of us that owned it. You know, I started a vodka company later. But so in the interim, Todd has this manager, David Weintraub. Weintraub. How do you say it? Weintraub? Or I always call him Weintraub.
Weintraub, I think.
Traub?
I've never used his last name.
Like Dick Trump. No, yeah. Dick Trump. Weintraub. No, but no, I, Todd said, David has an opportunity for you. Call David. He's my manager. I'm like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. So David calls me. However this worked, I don't know if he called me, I called him. And he's like, there's an opening for the Housewives. And I thought it was the Desperate Housewives. With Eva Longoria, which I watched. God. I don't.
Well, were you an actress?
No, but I just thought, oh my God, this would be amazing.
And, oh my God. So at the time, had you not watched any of the Housewives franchises?
No.
Wow.
I didn't know any of them. And, I mean, I knew Kelly Dodd had partied hard with my neighbor, Rob, and they were always kind of like there drinking. And I, you know, Rob was always telling me this is a housewife, and I didn't really care. I was like, oh, reality people, ugh, you know. Yeah. But then I am one. And then Kelly came over once, and I met her once. She liked my shoe closet, and then we got along great afterwards. But we didn't like each other at first, then we got along. But So David says, where, you know, do your hair and makeup, because he knows I don't. Dress in your finest, bring your Bentley, and meet me in Burbank tomorrow.
Oh my God. Bring your Bentley. Okay.
Is this the porn, like Burbank, really, David? And Too Short, imagine, what's my name, Bialch. So I drive up there. I get dressed in the parking lot. I'm coming from another, from other work. David holds up a towel. I'm getting dressed. I'm trying to brush my hair. I've got this interview, and I walk in. We pull up to the building, and I see this group of people sitting at the window. And I thought, oh, cool. Maybe Eva's going to be in there. I literally thought this.
Wait, he didn't say watch a couple episodes?
No.
Oh my
nothing.
God. David.
It was the next day. So okay. I think it was the next day. And David still doesn't believe me, but this is exactly what I thought. My brain was busy. I did not have time for David's crap. I didn't know if he was serious. I didn't know what this was. And everyone says they're going to get you on a show. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I open the door, and there's all the Orange County Housewife posters. And I went, my heart just went, boo.
Oh my goodness.
This is the wrong Housewives. Oh my God. And I was like, fuck. So I just went along with it. No big deal. I walked in thinking I'm not going to do this. They sat me in this room in the middle of this humongous, awesome looking editing studio thing, amazing looking building with this glass room in the middle and a boardroom table. And then all these guys come in, they're like, hi, you know, very flamboyant. I was like, hi guys. And they were like, they told me the scoop. You know, I listened. I told them who I was, told them I was divorcing Baron.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com. Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
Well, wait, hold on. What was their scoop? Like, what did they want? What were they pitching to you? Were they telling you about the show? Were they telling you what they were looking for?
Yeah, we just both talked about the show and they were done casting for the next season.
Right.
Then we just hit it off like this. Like, it was awesome. They were just great producers.
But I'm curious, are they looking for a certain character when that happens? Or are they just interviewing you and letting you be you?
They're just interviewing you. They don't want characters. That's all you. I mean, those women are those women. Mm-hmm. I mean, off camera, we're a little more friendly, but that's how they are. Like, they're not, you can say bullshit, but they are who they are. And okay. So I just figured I wasn't going to get the gig. So I didn't even care. So I'm just shooting the shit, blah, 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 you know, talking about my ex-husband, like, oh, fuck the mistresses and the babies and the girlfriends. And I'm just like, oh, I can't deal with this right now. And then I leave. Well, then a couple days later, you have to ask David. They go, are you sitting down? I'm like, no. They're like, well, sit down. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got it. No. And then they go, congratulations, if you want it, you got it.
Wow.
Like, oh, my God. And David goes, yeah, they were done casting and they picked you. So then all the housewives that had interviewed in Orange County were pissed, apparently. But I don't know any of them. By the way, I don't know any of them. So they gave it to me and told me not to tell anybody. But then they had me go to these parties with all the women.
Right.
So I met them all and they didn't know I was the new housewife.
Oh.
So
were you like, hi, I'm the new housewife?
No, not at all. Okay. I was just like meeting them and saying hi. Everyone's like, who's this? And I thought, okay, I'm going to wear a big booby dress and I'm going to wear blue to, you know, Emily's birthday party or whatever it was. Someone's birthday party. I don't even remember. Emily was there. Shan was there. That Bronwyn chick was there. And I think.
But you were friends with Kelly by now, no? Or no, it was just like an acquaintance type of thing?
No, they told me to be friends with her. She was the only connect to the housewives. So they kind of made Kelly be my friend.
Right.
And so we're friends now. We're not BFFs by any means, but we're friends. And so, you know, I'm friends with Shannon as well. Emily, you know, all of them have stayed at my houses. Gina has stayed at my beach house with her family. Emily stayed in my desert house. Shannon brought her twins to their birthdays in my desert house. You know, we're friends and we share stuff and we do stuff, but we're not like, you know, and Kelly, you know, she's, we've gone out sometimes and, she and Rick, when they were buying stuff, they would stay at my, I mean, we kind of just mingle. We're fine. Yeah. But in the beginning, I didn't know anybody. And I was really trying to say hi to everybody because they wanted me to meet people. So I met one photo to send to the producers. So I ended up accomplishing that goal. And then the first party, Bronwyn, we went to this other bar and I was trying to get to know Bronwyn, another party. And she tried to make out with me and I denied her. And ever since then, she hated me. So she
Time out. So I said, time out. Wait, hold on. So I'm so confused by this. When you started the season, had she already come out as being a lesbian or bi or whatever she came out?
I didn't watch any of it. So what happened was I watched a couple of the old shows, first show of every season, because it gives you a recap so I could see who these women were. And I never watched one with Bronwyn in it because she was new.
Right.
So I didn't get to watch that one. And so I didn't know who she was, but I was told she was a housewife.
But in your season, she was dealing with her alcoholism, correct? And she was still with her husband?
Yeah, alcoholism. And I think she's always been dealing with that. And I hope her the best on that. But and her coming out as a lesbo. But the issue with her, come on.
Bless her heart. All these people are coming out as late in life lesbians. Are we supposed to do that too? I mean,
Okay. I dabbled in high school. Later on, you know, I gave my ex-husband a few flings here and there, but you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, I really want to look Bush for the rest of my life. But I think that, you know, I think Bronwyn has tendencies. I think she has an addiction issue, like having children and alcohol, addicted to the camera, addicted to fame, addicted to children, baby bearing, and addicted to alcohol and, you know, whatever other drug. And so she was definitely really struggling and she put it on me. They tried to make her my friend. As if I was just as dysfunctional as she was. And it was humiliating. Cause I'm like, dude, this woman is a different level of dysfunction. I've got childhood issues. So she actually made friends with my ex-husband, she found his phone number online and contacted him. And then my ex-husband's current girlfriend at that time knew about my history because Barrett had told her. And apparently she told Bronwyn about my church cult. And then Bronwyn to use on the show as my storyline. So they brought it out on camera that day that I had the real panic attack. I didn't know they were bringing it up. I had no idea it was even going to come out on the show. And so Bronwyn was a big, now I look back at it and I've helped so many women with it coming out that it's a blessing. But at the time it was really, really shitty of Bronwyn to tell the producers and have them force me to talk about it on camera in the middle of Lake Arrowhead on a trail with cameras around me with Bronwyn, who I couldn't stand.
Right.
Cause you know, I couldn't stand her. And that was real. That was a real emotion. She was so fake that I don't like to be around that energy. And I'm a real big energy person. And that energy was just, putting me with her, trying to make me friends. And I just felt this goo every time I was around her. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping now she's a little bit better, but she let it all out of me. I was her soundboard for her negativity during the whole show. So the season was really dark with her in it. Mm-hmm. I don't pray. And I just kept saying, okay, angels, help this woman. She's fighting alcoholism, lesbianism, husbandism, childrenism, living situationism, housekeeperism, whatever she was fighting. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the season was extremely dark. COVID hit and it just became a disaster. But it's one of the number one rerun shows. So that's good.
Yeah. Talk about that for a minute. What was it like filming during COVID? How did that work?
Oh, disaster. I mean, they were extremely professional, but I didn't get one red carpet, no press, no Watch What Happens Live, film my testimonials in my garage with boob sweat and nobody, no hair, makeup. It was just basically action. And, you know, the producers were out in a van, and you can't have air conditioning on because of sound. I mean, it was just like weird. And, you know, we had a COVID person there or we'd get shut down. I didn't get to meet any of the girls, but they just kept forcing Brahman down my throat. And I was like, dude, stop it. We're not going to be friends. I'm not going to be friends with that energy right now. I'm going through a divorce. I can't deal with that energy. So I didn't really get to get close to any of the girls because they just shoved Brahman down my throat the whole season.
Wow. So it wasn't like you spent as much time with everyone as they made it seem and that you became, you know, immersed in everyone's life like they made it seem on the season.
They did a really good job of editing, which I think they always do. I had excellent producers, excellent camera crew. They worked their butts off to be compliant with COVID. It was a whole different ballgame. It was awesome.
But it's not like you created some, you know, I've been on a reality show where you almost feel like that becomes your TV family. No. You know, because you're put into scenarios with them. You trust them. They're going through the same thing you're going through with all the press. So no, you did not have that. Yeah.
I did not. Afterwards, I did. We all took a deep breath and we're like, oh my God, we lived through COVID on a TV show.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. We were like, afterwards, we all were like friends because of that unity. We all were like, okay. I mean, not Bronwyn, she won't talk to any of us, but we kind of all laughed about it. We're like, wow, we filmed a season in COVID. What? It was just insane.
Yeah, it's pretty miraculous. So how did you learn that you were no longer coming back?
The day they were supposed to announce me.
And they told you they were going to bring you back, right?
Yeah. I spent $45,000 and a month worth of negotiating contracts with Bravo for that show, seasons.
What do you mean about that? I'm curious because you were like, you got to pay to play kind of. Talk about that. Why did you spend $45,000?
Well, I'm not going to mention that, but there is... I'm just saying that they hired what's her name, the brunette,
Heather
DeBro, and her husband's on Botched. You know, they're produced by the same production team.
Yeah,
it was either me, the newbie, and she really wanted back on the show. You know, they needed to be more relevant with his business, stuff like that. And she's great on camera. She's really controversial, and I think. You know, and they have real money and, you know, like I do, we would have been great on the show together because we both have wealth and her husband's funny, you know, he's got his own show. And so when they announced her and fired me the same day, it was shocking. But I know she'd been telling them, you know, they had to pick somebody to fire and I was the easiest person to fire.
Yeah.
Because they had to get rid of. You know, I mean, and I totally get it. And I was disappointed to say the least because of my investors, because we had a Vargas Vodka deal where, you know, if the company took off, they get a percentage. You know, there was a good negotiable term in there because Bethany Frankel from Skinny Girl Vodka in New York didn't have a contract with Bravo. So they knew that if I was launching a vodka, they better get a contract because then that's revenue in their pocket. So it was weird. Like I had to go back to my investors and say, I just got fired. Like there goes our marketing. So it was difficult. And David was in Mexico in a pool having fun, I think on his honeymoon when he told me that day and I had already celebrated all weekend. It was weird. And I didn't know they could just fire you like that. I had no idea. I had lawyers in New York that drafted the contracts. I just assumed they took care of me. Mm-hmm. But we didn't. So it was a shocker.
You were not the only one they let go of, though, season?
No.
It was you and Kelly?
Kelly and Bronwyn.
Oh, and Bronwyn, too. Right. So what happened? What were your thoughts? What was life going to be like after you had been this big TV star?
Well, first off, I didn't feel like a star at all. I got no press. I didn't even know what to expect. I didn't see anybody. I didn't even get a post. I didn't get nothing. So I didn't even experience any celebrity at all from that show at first. I just knew that they had fired me along with Kelly, who's, you know, her statement was COVID is, what did she say? Something about thinning the herd. So I was categorized with her and lesbian Bronwyn and getting fired. So I was a little like, what the fuck? This is awesome. And I'm like the child molested, you know, church cult chick. I'm like, oh yeah, that looked great.
Well, but that must have been hard actually, because you really let yourself open up on that show, which you were not a public figure before that. And that must have been really difficult to let that come out, to talk openly about your divorce and your husband, you know, allegedly cheating and having a mistress and blah, blah, blah. And that must have been hard to then all of a sudden be like, okay, well, we took all this information.
Yeah, and now we're done.
And now we're done. Yeah. And not give you a chance to have your own narrative later.
I gave David 100% of my paycheck.
Why?
Because we had a 5-year term.
Oh my God.
100-year the first year. And then we had 4 more years. So then, you know, I had a negotiable term with David as well. So right. I didn't make a dime, not even a cent. In fact, I spent money on the show for no reason. Like I had to buy dresses and I had to pay for my own hair and makeup. Because, you know, during COVID, their excuse was, well, we can't pay. You're not allowed to have one. So if you want one, secretly you need to do that. So it was a slap in the face that they just took every piece of me, of my soul, of my history, of my gut, of my family, of my ex-husband, and then just said, you know what? Fuck you. We're done. Thanks. Piss off. That's how I felt. And I exited gracefully because if the ratings aren't there, the money's not coming in, the sponsors aren't there, then they need to figure out the formula. And apparently I wasn't in that formula, and that's fine. I'm certainly glad they got rid of who they did, because now they have a chance to revamp it, and it's taken them a couple of years. And I think they're doing a really good job. They brought Tamara and they brought the crew back, which I really wanted to work with. I wanted to work with Tamara and Vicky and everybody. And I didn't even get to, I got a crew that I was like, what is going on here?
Now, do you know them? Because you're a former, you've gotten a chance to meet them.
Well, I knew Tamara from the beginning. I was buying her CBD products and they were great. I couldn't sleep at night during my divorce. So Tamara got me through my divorce with her CBD. Yeah, I would buy it all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'd write her. I'm like, dude, you're like helping me out through my divorce. I love you. I know you're on the show. Congratulations, whatever. And then Vicky, I use her insurance company, Kodo, for all my properties. So she's insured my desert property. She just got this one insured. She's taking care of this new estate here. She's potentially going to be insuring my beach property and my Washington State property. So, you know, she's got a great team behind her. Vicky does. She got a great company. People are making fun of her. Her team's on it. So whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to know. But that seems interesting that you have sort of more friendships or acquaintances in a real way with people that are, you know, now on the show or the OGs more than you did when you were picked to be on the show randomly.
Correct.
So let's talk for a second before we get off this topic about the reality reckoning thing that's going on right now. You obviously went through this you went through this for a year. Talk to me about if you feel like this is valid, you know, if you feel like there was any sort of abuse going on, did you witness it? Did you go through it? I mean, we know what you went through as far as being let go and not being able to tell your story after you were very open. But what are your thoughts about this whole thing?
It's very difficult to talk about this, but I will say I knew what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. I read the contract. I knew the terms. They own me. and whatever happened on that show they own, and there's nothing I could do about it because of the preliminary terms of the agreement before I was filmed. Mm-hmm. So yes, I feel taken advantage of. Yes, I feel they could just fire you without any remorse or recourse. I feel like a piece of shit. Like I was just like a piece of paper. They're like, okay, the script's over, you know, but I knew what I was getting into. And it's always been that way where we are nobodies to anybody. We are disposable. It's the worst possible place to be in. So whatever happens with that situation for future reality stars will probably benefit the reality stars in a good way. But when I was on there, I knew what I was getting into, and I'm the era of the old way. And when the new way comes about, then it'll be a lot more people with stability. They're not going to get quite the crazy. You're not going to get the crazies that you get on that show when you have more contracts. That's for sure.
But do you think that people are acting out and being crazy and doing all these things that they wouldn't necessarily do because they think it'll get them a bigger paycheck and it'll keep them on the show? And they know what they're doing? Or do you think that they're being abused to act this way and it's not of their own doing? Do you know what I mean? Like some people saying it's not their fault.
It's their own doing. They're alcoholics. They're drinking on their own. They were already drinking.
Right.
They love the fame. 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, after I started getting recognized, I loved it. I was like, wow, this is cool.
Talk to me about that. Cause you said at the beginning that did not happen. So when did it happen and what was it like? How did it change your life?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was crazy. I was in London at a concert, and at this hotel random that I got on bookings.com. And this woman's like, oh my God, she has an accent. I can't say it, but you're Elizabeth Vargas from the Orange County Housewives. I'm like, my brother and everybody was sitting there and they're like, we're at Duran Duran concert. And I'm like, holy shit. We were in Scotland. I got recognized everywhere, all over the airports. I was in Iceland, recognized. Everywhere I go, people are like, and it's a great feeling. They're like, oh, we love you. And I'm like, you do? And I feel blessed. Or one woman even came up to me. I mean, it's so cool because when she's like, my daughter went through a similar situation that you did with my ex-husband who had forced her to go to this situation. And I want you to know that you really helped her get through a lot of steps that she needed to really see when you had opened up about that. And I was at my house on the boardwalk and she started crying in front of me. And I said, here, just give me a hug. So I leaned over. I mean, I don't even know this woman from Adam. And I gave her a hug and she just started bawling because she was so happy that they rewatched that episode. So for me, the fame wasn't, oh my God, I'm famous. You know, hold on. It was very spiritual for me to cleanse, and I'm very thrilled. So that's why I can't say anything bad about it, because as mad as I was, the positive is coming out of it. And there's a lot of women being helped from me. But as far as those women, they're already like that. They're not being forced. They're drinking on their own. I didn't drink. They asked me to drink. I didn't drink.
Mm. Yeah. I think it is interesting that people are claiming that they were forced to do things or put in a bad circumstance. And, you know, it's an odd thing to not say, but I'm my own person. I have my own free will. If I don't want to do something, I'm not going to, no matter what I'm being paid. And unfortunately, a lot of the news is people commenting on things they don't really know about. So we will see how all of that plays out. Right.
Well, also I can speak on that a little bit. So when you are on set, the producers do egg you on like, oh, so-and-so said this, did you know that? Mm. And you're kind of like, what, when? Mm-hmm. Well, she was confirming this on another scene over there. And you're like, huh? And mm-hmm. you get angry. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, yeah, you guys need to go to the bar. They don't say, here, drink this, get wasted and be stupid and go wear your Spanx between your thighs. You know, I mean, that's, you know, Vicky and Tamara, you gas those two. That was their own free will, all their craziness.
Yeah. Okay. So, life since, Real Housewives of Orange County, you had to start over. You were ending your marriage still, right? You were getting out of that. a lot of people think you were given a lot of money. He was a billionaire. How did you move on? How did you decide that you were going to make it on your own?
This is the big misconception. Once you get divorced and you're awarded a specific amount via a court order, which we ended up settling out of court primarily, and then we ended our divorce with the mediator. So there was some on the divorce papers, but mainly it was outside of the divorce. It was an agreement between us for stock options and things like that. But once you finalize, they still can fight. Then you gotta have to get a collection lawyer to collect. So it's like child support. You know, you can win child support, but if they don't pay, they don't pay.
Yeah.
So I was awarded stock options, a significant amount for American Seafoods. And he encumbered, you know, he did what he did so that I couldn't have him transferred to my name illegally. So I had to then acquire a lawyer, which I still have a lawyer. We're going through the process of trying to get what is owed to me, and I have not gotten a dime yet. He does deposit like a $5,000 deposit into my account, like on occasion, $5,000. I'm always laughing. Everyone's like, God, you're so rich. It must be nice to have X heavy as money. I'm like, would you like to see the bank account that he is supposed to be depositing into? So I ended up knowing that it was going to be a process to collect from him. And I said, okay. In my divorce, I lived in a 350 square foot apartment and rented my beach house to pay my lawyer fees. I rented it out for $2,700 to $4,000 a day and lived in that beach house, 350 square foot for a full year during the Housewives.
No way.
I did interviews in Brahma and made fun of me. Oh, she's not rich. She lives in it. I'm like, yeah, it's a 300. I had all my clothes and my dog in a 350 square foot down the street. I checked in 45 people in my beach house, VIPs. I have 45 five stars. I rented it out and realized I can make buku bucks on this house. Mm-hmm. I showed the judge that I'm capable of making my own money from that house. The judge awarded me the house because I paid most of the payment, almost all the payments. He didn't pay any of them. So the judge awarded me the beach house. So then I was like, holy shit, this is how I got into real estate. I was like, I kept living in that apartment even after my divorce and renting my beach house because that was just $2,700, $4,000 a day. I mean, think about it, your account. And then I didn't have to give it to my lawyers. I was like, oh my God, this is great. I don't care if I'm sweating and there's no central air.
Well, was it hard to find people to rent it, or there was a market?
No, I did VRBO. They do all Expedia. And I was a number top one producer. I was paying the city 10% on top for short-term rental on top of 10% to VRBO. So that's 20%. And then I had a private chef, private drivers. I hosted, I even cleaned the whole place myself. Wow. Cause I was like, you know, I had maids, I gave them robes and I gave the women eye masks. And, you know, I know VIP, my ex-husband was wealthy. We stayed in, you know, five-star resorts worldwide. I knew what wealthy people wanted. All my guests flew in private jets and I had a service go pick them up. White glove the whole way. So it was awesome. I had celebrities stay there, wealthy, you know, Madison Club, Discovery Land Company, people staying there. Everybody stayed there. It was awesome. And then I finally, you know, made enough money where I got an investor, bought another property. I started buying properties and also using my own money and then paying the investors back for those properties, you know, being able to rent short term. And now I've created this real estate empire that's insane, you know, worth over $30 million on my own. I was like, how did I do this? And people think I'm lying. And then they look up all the titles. They're like, she's not bullshitting. And so I'm very proud of my real estate, but it just happened that I just worked my ass off and just,
wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, you just have such an entrepreneurial spirit behind you, obviously. So how did you come up with the idea for your vodka line?
I got divorced and the tech company got shut down. And in the interim of doing the real estate that was getting me by, I could still maintain a living lifestyle without money from my ex. Mm-hmm. I wanted a product that was not tech, that was very simplified. And I thought it was COVID. And I said, well, what is people doing? They're getting hammered.
Right.
And so I launched a vodka. I pitched Jean Paul DeJuria, the founder of Patron Tequila. And he He said yes, and it took us a year to find the formula. We launched during COVID on 12/20/2020, and we went viral. We're in 9,000 locations, almost 12 states. We're in 11 states, almost 12, and six countries. So
I'm always curious, how do you come up with a new vodka line? You put all the mixtures together to make it taste different? Like, what did you do for it?
You have to have a formulator. So you obviously have a vodka formulator. You have to have your own distillery. So you can't utilize the third party distillery. So John Paul built me a distillery. Mm-hmm. You know, he's founded Patron Tequila. He knows alcohol. He doesn't know vodka. Never drinks vodka, but he said, why are you a pro at this? And I said, I drink a lot of it.
That makes you a pro.
Right. And then when we found the formula, I picked the most expensive vodka to distill seven times. One of the most expensive. So he knew that I knew vodka. He knew that I had quality. And he's like, yes, I'll do it. So built me a distillery, started distilling the vodka here over in Northern California. We moved the distillery recently to Modesto. Found the formula, beautifully clean, seven times distilled. You have to have specific ingredients, and the way they distill it, you can't give away your secrets, but, John Paul is very, very, very keen on how to distill alcohol properly. And luckily his distiller is top notch. We have nothing but positive results from the vodka. People rarely get hangovers because we have clean corn. The farms that we get the corn from are very organic. You're not going to get that. Like with potato, you get chemicals. Farmers have chemicals, they have pesticides and everything. So how do you get a clean potato? How do you get clean corn with all the pesticides that, you've got to really work hard, spend a lot of money not to get pesticides on that corn or potato, because that pesticide is going to go into your formula. So you're going to get a hangover because you're going to have all these chemicals, no matter how gluten-free it is, you're still going to have pesticides in that vodka. Right. So we are extremely clean. We're very proud of it. And it's very difficult and very expensive to make. We are the same price as Chopin, but because it was COVID, we decided to launch at Tito's prices and we're killing it. So,
oh yeah. I was going to ask you what your price point is. So where could people get it right now?
BevMo, High Times, Total Wine, anywhere online. And you just Google Vargas Vodka, your local grocery store, your local liquor store. We're at 4,000 locations in California alone. Okay. Obviously, California is our hometown. We're in New York, Florida, Texas.
I'm going to look for it today. I'm excited.
Yeah. Can I send you where are you located exactly?
In Palm Beach.
Oh, yeah. You should. Okay. I'll talk.
Do we have it here?
You have it there. So I'll find out where.
Okay. I'm going to look for it. And then I'll tell you how hard it was for me to find it. Cause I think you would be interested to know, like, if it's readily available for people. Do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Well, it's not, because we just launched. Only
yeah.
24 months is not very long, but we're doing our best.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. So you did not have that during the season when you were on the show, right?
No, but I launched it on the show.
Got it.
On the finale, at my house, on the beach. I made it.
Smart. So, but that's what they say, that everyone needs to have a product to launch or to talk about if you're going to be on the show. Do you feel like that's true? Like, did that help you just at least being able to launch it there?
Helped me being able to stomach being an idiot on a show. I was like, okay, there's an end goal here. I really think you need a product. And if you go into it just wanting to be famous, and then you're going to bitch when they fire you, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. But it's so smart because it gives you something to do after the fact and be relevant. I mean, you can have a project now. Talk to me also, you talked earlier about your love of animals, growing up with animals around you. Is that what made you get involved with what you do with animals now?
We Care Rescue Ranch is my nonprofit, 501c3. Robin White, bless her heart, helped me found it. I decided to start a rescue for animals because in life, I think the only thing that I had were animals that I could communicate with and relate to. Mm-hmm. They didn't care what I looked like. They didn't care that I had a childhood trauma. Dogs never judged me when I came home. If I had a hard day, they just love you. They cuddle. They're there for you. They're smile. I have a husky now. Coda. you know, dogs are just, animals are just kind in general, and we need to be kind to them. So I decided that a dollar of every one of my bottles is going to go to my 501c3. So.
Oh, I love that. That is amazing. I have two dogs myself.
I'm a terrible marketer. I didn't bring any vodka or anything today. So.
Oh.
That's okay. It was like last minute.
We'll put pictures up of it. Don't worry.
I'm such a terrible vibe. Today was just one of those days.
But I have two dogs myself. I've always had two or three dogs. I rescued one recently. She's a half Siberian Husky, half pit bull, which are the most misunderstood breed, in my opinion. So,
Siberian Husky pit bull?
Mm-hmm.
I have to see this dog.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture after. Okay. Her name is Nala. She's just, I love her so much. She gets in so much trouble. She's cost me a ton of money with trainers. I can't even walk her down the street. She's so strong. I have to get someone to come every night and walk her. I have 2 acres in my backyard. So she lives like in a jungle back there, loves it, but she's living the life. But she was really abused before I got her, and we saved her from animal control in Manhattan. And, if I could take in every animal, I would. I am an animal person. I love animals more than I love people. And I get them more, and it's so interesting to me because so many animals are, just left on the street. People just get rid of them. They are bad to them. And just with a little love, these animals, dogs, cats, whatever they are, will completely change and forgive. And, all they need is someone to give them a chance. And it just always breaks my heart when people, are cruel to animals. It's like the worst. So.
Well, I think that your passion for animals is validated through understanding that these animals do forgive quickly. Mm-hmm. Like we have a passion for them because they are unconditional love. Like we don't get that with a human. You don't. And so the only thing you do get, which is closest to a human, is an animal, is a dog or a cat or whatever. Not even a cat. Actually, cats will eat you if you die. A dog will die with you. But animals, we had a program called SNP OC, which we'll revamp eventually, but population control, not Bill Gates' style, but population control for animals, which is snipping them, making sure to spay and neuter them. It's really, really important, but it's not affordable. Mm. So creating that affordability so that there's not that overpopulation. Idaho did the SNP program. Mm. They don't have overpopulation. They have no homeless dogs or cats.
Wow.
Hello. If it can be done in certain areas, it can be done all over the country. So
that's incredible.
Like in that way, in 10 years, so let's say we started right now, we launched a national SNP program where everything was free. Everybody could bring in their dogs and cats or strays were all sniffed and whatever. In 10 years,
we
wouldn't even probably have homeless animals if we could do that. It's that easy, but it's just not,
Wow. Well, I love your passion for animals. Obviously we share that. So just quickly, I want to get into how is your dating life? I know that I want to clear something up because I think the press got it wrong when they said one of your former lovers is now incarcerated for 6 years. You did have an incident with a man, but he was not your boyfriend, correct?
Well, I tried to sleep with him, but he was too hot. He couldn't get it up. At one point I did. There was that occasion, but I
would love your honesty.
There's the boy toys in your life, and then there's the boyfriends, and they're completely different categories.
Right.
I had hired a sales rep for Vargas Vodka in Santa Monica. I met him in Santa Monica. Turned out he was a stalker to a lot of really wealthy women and had a group of extortionist people that just did this for a living. And I was a target. And I ended up realizing later on down the road that he was a felon. So I told him he couldn't sell Vargas Vodka. This is before I even started. Like he came to Newport. And then we got wasted one night. I thought he was really cute. I used to like really young. After him, I do not like young guys. In fact, my Albanian 6'4" right now is the hottest mofo I've ever met, and we're sticking to him. But this Ryan guy, I showed him all the bars we were in, showed him the brand, didn't sell one ball of vodka. And then I finally said, well, normally I would do a background check, but my assistant had passed away from COVID in January. So I didn't do a background check. I didn't do a background check on him. And it turned out to be the worst decision of my life. I always do background checks, but I was in a moment where she had passed away, and she always does the background checks. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out he had just gotten out of prison for extortion. And I didn't know this.
How did you find him to begin with? He found me.
I was at the bungalow in Santa Monica, the super high end place. They were all wearing suits. My girlfriend was single. I went with her after filming my new show, Success of Unusual People. Mm-hmm. He starts saying hi to me, and I went to the bartender to see if he knew of any sales reps, because I'm always hustling. Mm-hmm. Well, he overheard me, and he's like, "Oh, I'm a sales rep. I used to sell alcohol. Maybe I could help you." Bam.
Right.
But it turns out he was a drug.
Gotcha.
Yes. Drug salesman, drug dealer. And later I found out, and an extortionist and a felon. And I had fired it. So I fired him and I said, "Look, didn't fire him, but I just didn't really fully bring him on." And then as soon as I let him go, after finding out he was a felon, he had just got out of prison. He went postal. That's when he started whipping out his guns and saying, "Fuck you. Fuck you, fuck you." And then all of a sudden the guns to my head, threatening, needing money. I mean, oh my God, it became a disaster. And he threatened to call my ex, said he had naked pictures of me that night. We did a tasting, and I went to bed upstairs. I let him stay in my house in Newport. I have two bedrooms. He claimed he came in and took all these naked photos of me, like he had drugged me and I was out. I didn't know if that was true or not. I woke up just fine. He was, he was in the other room. Would never have thought. He's like, "You remember that day?" He said, so then he's like, "I'm going to tell your ex-husband and I'm going to tell your partner who you really are. I'm going to show him these photos." Well, he was very smart not to text that, but verbalized it continuously. Did text a little bit about it. So I did show the police that, and he was convicted. But it was a disaster. So for a full 3 weeks, I was being held against my will to pay bills and money for him and shit. And he wanted my company car and said I bought it for him. And oh my God, it was a disaster. And
for
then
3 weeks.
Oh yeah. I couldn't believe I got into this situation. He's like, "If you tell anybody what's going on, I'm going to do this and this and this and this." And I don't really want to get into it. I get anxiety.
Yeah. That's fine. But luckily for you, so you ended up having cameras in your house, right? Is that how you got the footage?
Yeah. When he started putting guns to my head, I was gonna hit him with this shovel with a sharp knife side. But I realized if I killed him in my house, my real estate would go down.
Smart.
So I thought I will wait till I'm somewhere else. But then I thought, well, I don't want to have murder on my record. So I just thought, okay, what do I do here?
Right.
I was like, put cameras up, and I knew he wouldn't kill me because I was his money. I called my advisor. He said he was, well, the one day that this all went down, I didn't call the police. My wealth advisor did, because money was going out. And Alan Schreiber from TSG Wealth Management, I said, "Look, I got some wires that need to go out today. I need to do these wires. I need to show these people that the wires are going through today. And I'm going to give them my car. I'm going to give them everything." He goes, "What's going on?" I finally just broke down and told him I was being extorted and they're coming over with guns and they're taking my shit and I got to wire some money. Mm-hmm. He's like, "It is my fiduciary duty to send over somebody to take a statement." I'm like, "You can't do that. They're coming over right now." So he sent over the police. I just told him what was happening. I finally showed him the bullet holes and I showed him all the threats on my voicemails and the death threats and everything to the police. And I said, "Look, can you get him not at my house, get him somewhere else? He's coming right now." Little did I know that they said, "No problem, Elizabeth. We'll get him later." Little did I know they were assembling a massive SWAT team and pulled up his records and knew he was a bad, bad person.
Right.
And that's
luckily for you.
Yeah. And they were going to take me by gunpoint to the warehouse and get the car. And yeah. I was beside myself. Didn't even know how. There was dog shit everywhere on my house. I couldn't even leave my house. Like I couldn't walk my dog. I was sleeping in my house for days, not knowing what to do. It was horrible. Horrible. Oh,
all right. Well, he's been sentenced to 6 years, so we don't have to worry about him for a little bit, but that's
good old California, 6 years.
Right. Okay. Talk to me really quickly about your show. You are doing an amazing show. Has it found a home or are you shooting for it? Where?
Discovery Channel, but Discovery's going through a big change. And I can't launch the show at Jean Paul de Joria, Success of Unusual People, showcasing really wealthy people coming from nothing, creating something, then giving back. So I have all these wealthy individuals lined up to interview, like Jean Paul de Joria, those type. But we filmed the first hour show. It's a docuseries. And then we're supposed to be launching it on Discovery, but Discovery is doing such a change that we can't do anything. So it's been on hold for over a year now. But once it does launch, it's going to be a great show to help showcase how to create something out of nothing and give back.
The concept is so great. So I think it'll be terrific. All right. Last question for you then would be, what do you think is the most misunderstood thing about you that you want to clear up?
The most misunderstood is I am self-made. I think that the decisions that I've made in my life to be where I'm at today are decisions based on truth, honesty, and the goal of personal, financial, and mental freedom. People tend to think that, you know, I married a wealthy guy and, you know, and you got a bunch of money from him and good job, you divorced well. But I really had that journey to learn and I really enjoyed that journey. I didn't marry him to take his money. I didn't, you know, that's why I haven't really pursued it that hard. I knew I could do it on my own now. I had the tools. Mm-hmm. And the misconception is I didn't suck dick. Just kidding. And I also didn't suck at life. Winning.
Oh my gosh. That's hysterical. Well, no. But I think that's a good point though, because a lot of women, first of all, as you and I both know, there's nothing better than having your own financial freedom. If your right. finances are tied to someone else and to someone else approving of you and you being under their spell, their vision, whatever it is, it is going to be the most miserable life. When you can make your own money, make your own decisions, have your own things, you have freedom and you have the ability to be happy if you want to. So I definitely commend that about you. And I do think that people probably think that because your ex was as rich as he is, that's what you're living off of. You don't do anything on your own. You haven't come up with ideas and are a hard worker. But I think it's obvious that since childhood, you are a hustler, not in a bad way. I am too. Like I like, no matter what you have, you probably like to work. You like to have a project. And I think it makes you feel fulfilled. And I think that's very obvious from speaking to you. So I enjoy the fact that, you know, I get to speak to you like this and can easily see who you are. Whereas on a show where they have you for, you know, episode after episode, they can really create you to look a certain way. And it's just smoke and mirrors. It's not really who you are. So where can people find you now? What can we expect from you in the future?
Elizabeth Lynn Vargas on Instagram. Hopefully Discovery Channel for Success of Unusual People. And you never know, I might be doing another season of The Housewives. So we'll see.
Okay. So reality TV is not off the table for you.
Oh no. You know, it was for a while, but, I want to go back and have fun. Yeah. I want it to be a season of fun with these ladies. Cause now that I've gotten that negativity out and like all that junk out of my trunk, now I can just be like, okay, where's my Spanx? Give me some tequila.
But also you're in a different place, right? You're like not in this sad place where you're going through a divorce and all this stuff. Yeah. Like you're owning it. You're really owning it. So I think you'd be a different
person. You can have fun and meet people and mingle and be fun with the camera before you're like mask and corp and you're like, what do I... So I really want to go back on. I hope they let me one day. There's been some, you know, discussions and figuring out how everything would work, but I don't have any hangups. So you never know. Awesome. And I love the fans. They're all crazy. I'm sure your fans are crazy too. So
the Bravo fans are the biggest crazy fans ever. I mean, you don't know what to expect. And, you know, I will just tell you quickly, there was once a rumor that I was in talks to do The Housewives. And it was, you know, in Page Six, which then went everywhere. I can't tell you how much free stuff I got in my mailbox and in my DMs, people offering to do things. And I'm like, thinking to myself and saying to my friends, that is a total rumor. Like, I don't even know why people are. And imagine if I got on the show, like how I would be treated. Like, that's unbelievable. So I know how it must feel, you know, being on a show like that and being so revered. People think you are Angelina Jolie. It's like, who's that anymore? You guys are the stars, right?
I mean, I got free banana bread for life. You know, I got like charcuterie boards or charcuteries, whatever they call them.
The important things. I mean,
yeah. I love it. I got some party planners and I mean, you name it. They're like everywhere.
Right. Oh my God. That's so funny. All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck. We hope to see you again on something. Good luck with your show. I hope that that does really well. It's such a great brand. And I'm going to try your vodka later tonight.
Yeah, it's Vargas Vodka and at Elizabeth Lynn Vargas on Instagram. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passionate belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com. Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passionate belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.